all over East Central Kansas with all of their vehicle needs. It's our top priority every day for every customer. We offer the best cars, trucks, and SUVs from Chevrolet and our best customer service, too. Our certified technicians will keep your vehicle running in top shape. So for all your vehicle and service needs, come see us at Longbine Auto Plaza or visit us online 24/7 at longbineauto.com. Chevy, together, let's drive.
KVOA News Time, 8:29. It's Newsmaker 2 time here today. We're talking a whole lot of science projects here.
A lot of
that generated here by Emporia State University. We've got Professors Mark Brown, Erica Martin, Daphne Mays joining us, and also Emporia Amateur Radio Society Representative Tim East with three different general talking points that we're going to be addressing here soon.
Plenty to get to. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Doing good. Yeah, Erica, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Daphne, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing good. Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, thanks for joining us, guys. We've got a lot to get to here, and I wanted to start because we want to talk about science on Main Street. That's a conversation point that's been going on now for pretty well close to a year, if not longer. Also, the what sounds like the rescheduled launch for Artemis II and Eris, the amateur radio and the International Space Station project that was announced several months ago, and I want to make that our starting point. So, Erica, I'm going to bring you up to the forefront right away, and let's talk about Eris and kind of where things stand in getting the community into Eris and specifically our students into this Eris project.
Sure. So some of the things that we've just finished doing, the PAROC students and staff have been at the Rec Extra after-school programs at our elementary schools, having the kids do astronaut training, which was super fun. And so kids got to learn about the importance of staying in shape in space and how astronauts do that, a little bit about the difficulties and importance of space communication and things to think about when you can't see each other in real life and have to communicate over long distances. And then a little bit of engineering where they got to build their own spacecraft and try to launch our little painted rock turtles on the crafts that they create. We also very excitingly had our first Eris practice contact date. And that went pretty well. So we got students together at PAROC with the Emporia Amateur Radio Society. So they were introduced just to the space, the folks that will be there the day of, and then they got to know which questions were selected, which was pretty exciting.
Boy, it's been a pretty good update then.
You've accomplished a lot.
Yeah, it just keeps happening, you know?
No kidding. There you go. Now, do you have a date yet that you can reveal for the Eris contact?
No.
Everybody tells me no.
I tell you what, Erica, though, what does it mean for you to see the kids react the way they have? You know, especially with really all the different potential connection points that you guys have been able to develop since this was announced late last year.
Sure. So, I mean, just for me, getting to know a lot of the teachers and students and community members as we are involved in all these events has been really fun. Everybody has different kinds of questions and different thoughts about whatever topic they're learning, and that's been really just enjoyable to do with them and explore and be excited about. At the contact event, I think it was really neat to see the kids. They clearly really want to ask the questions well, right? And we had David Claridge, one of the EARS members, be the pretend astronaut so they could hear his responses. But I think the day of when you actually get real-time responses from the astronaut, that's going to be pretty cool.
So how many questions were cleared? Can you tell us that?
We have 28 questions.
That's an impressive number. That is an impressive number. And I want to bring Tim in here with this part of the conversation as well. Erica's into amateur radio. Tim, you've been involved with amateur radio for a while here. What does it mean for you, for the EARS group, to be involved with this at this stage and, you know, what's ahead here over possibly the next few weeks?
Oh, we're very excited about it. Last fall, Erica came to our club and asked if we would be interested And I've had the honor of serving, excuse me, as president of the club for a number of years. And we had a discussion, and we all were in. So she applied, and it was very exciting when they announced that ESU was selected. And we're quite honored to be supportive of that effort. Coming up, we were involved with the practice session that we've already held, but we've got two more practice sessions, and we've got equipment that we've set up so that the students can practice actually communicating over the radio to someone. We had David Claridge be the astronaut, and we helped them to position themselves and speak at the proper levels and distance from the mic, etc., and when to stop and when to start, because you know, you can't see the other person, so you have to practice that.
So what kind of equipment, Tim, do you bring in? What are we working with here?
We're working with very high frequency VHF radio, mobile radios in the amateur band. We're working with microphones, and we're patching in sound to ESU's IT group so that they can transfer that. And I think they're going to have some listening stations at a couple of different remote areas. Erica can probably talk more about that, but we have to provide that to them. So we're talking a couple of radios, power supplies, microphones, microphone patch cables. And we're also talking, of course, a couple of antennas, a main antenna plus a backup with rotors on them, so that they will automatically track the International Space Station, because they're not going to stop that thing just for us so we can have good comms. They're going to keep flying over, and we've got to track them while they fly.
Bring up a good point there. You bring up a really good point. What has it meant for you and the club members to – I asked kind of the question of Erica, but from your perspective here, the fact that the kids are as engaged as they are and as interested as they seem to be, what does this do for you and the club members as we get ready here for whenever that contact's going to be?
Oh, it's very exciting. To watch the kids when they come up to the mic, you know, they're teenagers, they're young people. And there's a little bit of cool factor associated with it, but yet, you know, they were all business, and they were really concentrating on doing a good job. They were taking direction. It was quite nice, and I think Emporia can be quite proud of the students that have been selected. They've done a great job in preparation, and I think Emporia could be very proud of Emporia State University and the fact that we were selected. It's quite an honor, actually.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. So, Tim, any pressure to make sure we get a quality connection, everything works right? Feeling any heat there?
Oh my gosh, yes, we do. We have quite a bit of pressure, and I tell you what, the butterflies are going to be in there, and I'm going to try to keep them set until after this is over, because it's very exciting and what have you, but if it messes up, then I've got egg on my face and the people that are working with me. But I do want to say one thing before I let you go, and that is there's been a lot of interest because of this in folks getting involved in amateur radio and getting their license from the FCC. And that's been very exciting for us, too, because we would love to bring people in and give them the opportunity to become amateur radio operators and be more involved. So, anyway, that's all part of it, and we're very excited.
Daphne, I'm going to bring you in here and get your perspectives here on you know, not just the fact that this is drawing a lot of excitement here amongst, you know, you guys at ESU, ears, the students that are going to be involved, but there's a lot of lessons coming from this specific project that really, the way it seems, are stretching across generations, as Tim just mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. You know, with our STEM outreach programs and the amazing faculty we have here and community members, you know, with these different types of expertise in STEM, you know, just for us to be able to collaborate and work together, I think that helps enable us to reach,
you know, as many people as we possibly can, young and older, and, you know, really try to get people excited. I think we're all, you know, just innately curious and like learning, and so we love being able to provide opportunities for that for our community. So we're also very honored as well here to be able to work with those incredible partners and to be able to, you know, inspire people in multiple ways. And so we're just thrilled to have this opportunity that Dr. Martin and Mark kind of, you know, really, I don't know how it was found. I think Mark maybe saw the opportunity last year at some point, and Dr. Martin's really a go-getter, obviously, and so we've been able to put together something really special, so it's been awesome to be part of that.
Mark, from your perspective, this is, you know, kind of a, I'm not exactly sure we could call it a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but this is an opportunity that the students specifically aren't going to get for a long period of time.
That's true, and the thing is, as Daphne and Eric have both talked about, we can extend this to all facets of our community, to our students, even our university students. I teach space science, so I can actually involve my space science students in this, talk about the International Space Station and just space flight overall. And in my class, I touched on the electromagnetic spectrum. We're going to be talking about that at the library. Tim East was at the library this past weekend, so we are reaching out in all sorts of avenues to get people excited about this.
And I think you've done just that. There is a lot of excitement. Erica mentioned no date.
Not yet.
No date.
No date, but how much lead time do you expect, Erica? Any idea there?
I have some ideas, and I'm going to be real honest. I'm not going to tell you.
Hey, now.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what interviews are all about. I'm not going to tell you anything.
Oh, man. That's it.
I'm very excited to have the go-ahead to share a date once that is approved, right. And I will definitely let you know.
We appreciate that.
Okay. Well, let's shift over here to Artemis II, Mark. Where do things stand here? Because if memory serves me correctly, this launch has been delayed here. The lunar mission has been delayed here a couple of times already.
So yes, it's been delayed. The vehicle was rolled back to the vehicle assembly building at Kennedy Space Center. They had a really good wet dress rehearsal, which means they've totally fueled the rocket. They were looking at all the data, and initially before that, they had a hydrogen leak, and so they went back to the pad. They fixed that hydrogen leak. They went through another wet dress rehearsal, and that looked stunning. Everything looked awesome. And then as they were going through the data afterwards, they found that they had issues with a helium flow in the upper stage, which is called the interim cryogenic propulsion stage, or the ICPS. And so because those data and findings were not to their satisfaction, they had a decision for no-go to proceed to a launch later on, which was supposed to happen just a couple of days ago. And so that particular system in the upper stage was not accessible from the launch pad. So that was the reason they had to roll it back to the vehicle assembly building so they could get inside there and address that helium flow issue.
Pretty disappointing, Erica, I think, at least for now. But it sounds like, you know, all the steps are being taken so that this is a successful launch and a successful return.
Absolutely. And so on Friday, actually, Jared Isaacman, the NASA administrator, he kind of just basically is going through and overhauling the Artemis launch schedule. So he's kind of added another facet to the overall mission. Artemis 2 will launch. The earliest date will be April 1st. And then we are going to take a crew of four to the moon. They're going to slingshot around. We're going to bring them home safely. And then so Artemis 3 was supposed to land on the moon. That was coming up in 2026, next year. And so basically they pushed that back to 2027. We're taking us back to the basics, what the Apollo era did, Apollo 7, Apollo 8, Apollo 9, and Apollo 10, and trying to basically restoring the core capabilities, building strength and confidence, and so getting us to a more simplified approach where we will actually take Artemis 3 into low Earth orbit. It will be a crew of four, as far as I understand, and they will rendezvous and practice docking and undocking with the various lunar landers, probably those from Blue Origin and SpaceX, if those are ready to go. So they want to do that with both vehicles and then decide which one they're going to take to the moon in 2028 for Artemis 4 and Artemis 5. And so basically it's just getting the launch cadence into about 3 months or 4 month sessions. Recall, we launched Artemis 1, safely returned over 3 years ago. And so basically, if you look at the Apollo era, if you look at the space shuttle program, we went through Mercury and Gemini and then Apollo and then the space shuttle. We were launching missions, NASA was launching missions every 3 to 4 months. So they want to get that launch cadence up. And much like if you work out during the day and if you just take a long break, you lose that muscle memory. So in order for NASA to get this going, they need to keep their skills from going to atrophy and to really start to build confidence back in NASA. And this is also just super great for public outreach to get the public interested and excited as well.
Yeah, good update there. Let's, Mark, talk about Science on Main Street. Where is that project at?
I don't know, Chuck, to be honest with you, and it's not that I'm holding back information like Erica is.
Big Mark.
That's kind of, I don't know, Daphne can
speak. Well, we're still working on that one. We're definitely still interested in having it, you know, happen, but we're still kind of working through that, and It's a bigger project, and so it kind of has a lot of parts to it. But we definitely are still wanting to do it, and we're still moving forward. We're just we don't really have any exciting updates at the moment. But I can say that we are still working on it.
Well, I guess if you're talking about the solar system walk, that is still in the makings, mm-hmm. and so we are just we're a bit delayed right now, and we're just jumping through some hoops. We've got to get through Eris before we can start focusing on the solar system walk again. So there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot on your plate.
Yeah, no doubt.
See that, so.
Daphne, really quickly, before we wrap things up, you know, we've talked an awful lot about Eris with the community engagement side of things, and I'm going to leave out Science on Main because that one sounds like it's, I'm not going to say back burner, but it's you know, kind of taking a little bit of a little bit less emphasis here with Eris and Artemis. What has taken place here for ESU to kind of get the community ready for Artemis?
Maybe
Artemis, I think that Mark has a couple, you know, of ideas, but the dates have been kind of, you know, unknown, and so
kind of thrown into the little confusion.
Yeah, but you know, we try to keep people informed. Certainly, our social media page, he posts a lot of things and tries to keep people as updated as possible through that. So our STEM outreach at Emporia State University page, and then also our PayRock socials is a great source of information for upcoming and things that we've done. And so, you know, Erica had mentioned the amazing work that the PayRock team with Alex Hayes has been doing with the school. So if people want to check that out, there's some great photos and just different things on there connected to the Eris work that we've been doing. So we encourage people to stay tuned and, you know, check that stuff out.
Well,
yeah, I think we might look at having, you know, as we get closer to the date, roughly April 1st, April 3rd, that time frame, if we're able to have possibly a Artemis launch watch party or even a landing party, you know, watch party, we'll see if we can delve into that with the university.
Well, as always, we appreciate your time. A lot going on, for sure.
Exactly.
Mark, yeah, Mark, thanks.
Appreciate that.
All right, Erica, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks, Daphne.
Thank you.
Tim, thanks for joining us here.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Boy, what a big update there on science-related matters there with ESU professors Mark Brown, Erica Martin, Daphne Mays, and also Emporia Area Radio Society representative Tim East, focusing on the amateur radio on the International Space Station, or Eris project, but also specifically diving into Artemis with a brief update on Science on Main. So if you want to be part of our morning show, this week in that 720 or that 820 spot is almost full. We only have Fridays open right now, but you can call us at 620-342-1400. The Newsmaker 2 tomorrow, talking with Northern Heights Honor Society members, talking about a blood drive on Wednesday. Don't forget our interview with Ag Secretary Mike Beam about the Kansas Grasslands Report and Issues Brief coming up for our Newsmaker 3 tomorrow at 8:40.
KVOE Live and local Newsmaker 2 brought to you by Longvine Auto Plaza on West Highway 50, driven by longvineauto.com. It's 8:48.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. This morning at 11 a.m. Eastern.